Why should you visit TheChairShot.com? TheChairShot.com is your home for hard-hitting reviews, news, opinion, and analysis with attitude. Why? Because you're smarter than the average fan. TheChairShot.com. Always use your head. Attitude, bitch.
Yeah, welcome to the Raw Reaction, where we have a reaction to Raw. I'm your host, Tony Acero. With me, we have Andrew. No last name needed.
God. You're just bringing that high energy today, aren't you, Tony?
Oh, I thought we were airing on PBR tonight.
Wait, we're airing on PBR, so it's just low budget, but at least it's cheap so we can get drunk? I'm okay with that.
Cheap
PBR
enough.
Work.
Yeah. Pabst Blue Radio.
Yeah. Oh, or Blue Ribbon Radio. Oh, we need to add another R, like this is being the elite. Okay.
PBRR. PBR.
R. Get it?
Hi, Andrew.
What's up, Tony? How you doing, bud?
Good. What's it been, like a week?
You know, it's usually about that amount of time. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Anything ground shaking happen? What about you? Anything crazy?
No, not necessarily. I mean, football season is in full effect, so the bar is really busy, as am I. I actually made this new drink for the fall. It's really, really good. What I did was I took a bottle of Maker's Mark and I put it in a mason jar with slices of Honeycrisp apple, a couple of cinnamon sticks, some allspice, and brown sugar with a hint of maple syrup. And then what I do is stir that on, with a few ice cubes, and then top it with Angry Orchard. Call it a Maker's Cider Punch. It's really good.
See, that doesn't sound bad, because, see, Maker's Mark has a really, really, really nasty bite to it, and everything you added will counter that. So that's really, that's a good use of Maker's Mark right there.
Thank you. That's why I get paid the big bucks.
Yeah, you're good at what you do, and it's more than just writing and talking, apparently. Damn, you're like a triple threat or some shit.
At the very least, a triple threat. Fatal four-way. Whatever. I don't know. Whatever.
Six-pack challenge?
So,
I don't know.
Well,
actually, six-pack challenge does work in multiple different ways. Yeah, there we go.
So, for everybody that's listening, what are there, like, two of you guys? Harry? I don't know. We're here to talk about Raw. Harry obviously is missing, and if he were here, he would say, hey, guys, let's talk about that show that happened in Australia. But I would counter that with the reality that we basically saw that show tonight. So what's the point? Moving on, right?
I mean, yeah, we can move on. That's perfectly fine, because whatever we didn't get tonight, we're definitely going to get tomorrow, because it was a dual-branded house show.
Oh, yeah. You know, a dual-branded house show. It really was a house show. I mean, nothing spectacular happened from what I can tell. I saw roughly the first half, you know, and that's about it. Then moved on with life and made a cool drink.
Yeah, I was...
What happened to
kind me? Of... Oh, tonight? I was just going to say with the whole... dual-branded house show. I was just impressed they actually gave the Australian wrestlers the hometown win. That was probably my biggest takeaway from that. And I think you probably saw the Iconics match, right?
Yeah.
So that was the one I didn't think they were going to win, and they did with some interesting kind of like tandem move. But yeah, so that's different. Are we going back to hometown, like home field advantage? Are we doing that again?
I don't know. But I'll tell you what, tonight's Raw started off with two fresh and young upcoming wrestlers who were there to just make a stand and create magic.
Oh, boy. I can
yeah.
feel the sarcasm just permeating through the phone at the moment. So. Oh, God.
Yeah. So, Triple H came out, and not far after came HBK. And they okay, so I believe that we're going to have some differing opinions here with regards to the promo specifically that Triple H cut. He went on a long extended metaphor talking about how they were mountain climbers who were taking 20 years to climb up a specific mountain. Once they got to the top of the mountain where they were supposed to be celebrating, an avalanche ran over them and they tumbled down in shame. And then they tied that promo with another promo about respect and repeated the word, which is, you know, wrestling promo 101, repetition and whatnot. Aside from the reality that you cannot have an avalanche once you're at the very top of a mountain, I feel like this was Triple H trying to be Triple H instead of just being Triple H. And what I mean by that is that the promo was a bit too on the nose with metaphorical, you know, like, just, we get what you're doing. You're not that great at it. I've never thought that he was. He does repetition a hell of a lot more than you should. This one just, for me, came off a little too much. Like, calm your tits, Paul. Just calm them, all right? Calm them. But the takeaway here is that HBK is coming out of retirement. There's going to be a tag match against the Brothers of Destruction. I know that fans are probably up in the arms about, you know, HBK going back on his word, and they tried to alleviate that stress by cutting the promo about respect. I'm kind of the mind where I don't really care. I mean, I think that if HBK were to come out of retirement, I would want it to be against anybody but The Undertaker and Kane. But at the end of the day, it's not my career, so I'm not offended. I highly doubt you are either, but I was curious as to what you thought about specifically him coming out of retirement. And, like, is it as big a deal as people are making it out to be? Do you even give a damn?
Do I even give a damn? All right, let's deconstruct this slowly. Yes, I kind of give a damn. Because loser leaves town, retirement, stipulations used to matter using the old school mentality of wrestling. However, much like you already alluded to, and like we've seen the last couple weeks, every time HBK talks, it was in reverence or deference or whatever funny, cute word you want to use to like fluff this up to SAT level of, you know, The Undertaker, respect, that kind of motif, overall, you know, vibe, theme. And when everybody's standing there after a match, granted, yes, they used underhanded tactics to win the match, but it was no disqualification. It is what it is. We know what Shawn Michaels is about. And then they stabbed him in the back when they were trying to have the feel-good moment. Yeah, I mean, the respect angle makes sense. However, I feel like Triple H's promo came off a little more stagnant and full of itself. Or I think the word I used in our group was pretentious and artsy. Because, yeah, he went for the imagery too hard, and I agree with you that Triple H was never a good promo. Like, he was solid, and when he put some passion or when he put a little more bass in his voice or a little more growl into it, then it got a little more alluring or enticing or captivating. But he always had someone to play off of. And when it was him and Shawn, usually Shawn would be the goofy, stupid one, and Triple H would kind of try to be the domineering one, the imposing one, and use the artsy-fartsy thing, and then Shawn would just look confused and be like, I mean, he might even say something fourth wall breaky back a couple years ago, like, how can we fall down a mountain if we're already at the top and then there's an avalanche? Like, he would take the piss out of the promo, which was part of the I guess, the endearing aspect of his character. But since he was in respect, angry, I have to come out of retirement to teach you a lesson kind of mode, and Triple H was trying really, really hard to be Triple H, which I like how you worded that. Yeah, it dragged on. It did what it had to do. It was all right for what it was supposed to get across, and compared to what we usually get nowadays, it wasn't bad. But, yeah, it was long-winded and could have offended me. The whole HBK coming out of retirement, if they didn't kind of telegraph it so hard, and they actually have a somewhat viable reason to have him go back on his word and even feel like, even say it and feel like he's struggling with the decision. So I'm okay with it. It doesn't insult me.
Frankly, I found his promo to be both shallow and pedantic.
Ooh, those are such good words. And I know it's a reference. I can't place it at the moment. God damn it.
Family Guy.
Thank you. I'm just like, son of a bitch, I know that line. I just couldn't remember where it was from.
So immediately after that, we get a bizarre segment / match where I don't think anybody was ready for what happened. And the end result, I think, was beneficial for everybody involved. But the road getting there was a very, very awkward one. Lashley comes out to face Kevin Owens in another, not exact rematch, but basically of Saturday. And Leo rushes ringside, and they do make one of the worst decisions ever, or the best decision ever, and give him a live microphone during the match. Now, for the first minute or so, me as a fan, I'm watching and I'm saying, this is the worst decision ever. You guys are idiots. What are you doing? He's not fun. He's not funny. It's annoying. It's removing me from the match. And it did multiple times. I was taken out of the match. And it seemed like the match was taken out of the match. It didn't really flow well. It was a little clunky. Leo got in the way quite a few times, and Kevin Owens was supposed to be continuously distracted. But while the match was going on, you saw a few things happen. Leo was annoying on purpose. He was goading the crowd to chant for Lashley, knowing full well that they wouldn't. And while he was doing all this, Lashley himself was doing just some heel tactics, posing with his, you know, flexed arms, treating Kevin Owens like a little punk, even going so far as to remove a few of the flashy moves that he does. And also, likewise, Kevin Owens was doing the opposite, bringing back a lot of his flashy moves, trying to do the moonsault off the top rope, showing that he actually is athletic, which is a direct contradiction to what Leo was saying, you know, flying over the top rope and just being the Kevin Owens that we like, you know, more steenish than anything. So what I questioned was, during the match, was, are we seeing a double turn? Now, by the end of the match, we see that Lashley goes full heel and, you know, breaks some legs and whatnot. My question is, do you think this was a double turn, or do you think this was just for Lashley?
I'm only laughing because I remember when we had this tiny little conversation in the chat, and I agree to a point that it was probably a double turn. Since Owens had all of the characteristics of the baby face and the face in peril and trying to fight through the pain or fight through, you know, even tried to fight back when Lashley went back for seconds and thirds to keep wrapping his knee around the post. But WWE will find a way to screw it up. And I don't know how, because it was pretty solidified in my opinion. Yes, Lashley's a heel. Owens should be regarded more as a face. But I think it comes down to how the interactions with Elias and Owens go. Like, if Elias turns on Owens, or Owens turns on Elias in the face kind of manner, then sure, they're setting up Owens definitely as a face. Or then we get what you said at the end, where maybe it was just for today and just for Lashley. But, you know, I had the same feeling as you during the match, where at first I thought it was the worst thing ever to give Leo Rush a live mic. I also had this wave of realization as the match was going on it's done purposely. He's the annoying heel manager, and he's just getting heat for Lashley, and Lashley was playing into it well. My major problem, where it's still bad to a degree, but it is performance bad, not conceptually bad. So concept-wise, it was good. Heel turn, getting heat on him, make people just hate Leo and then hate Lashley by proxy. I get it. That's fine. But Leo is so dumb, and he's not clever. He has no spontaneity. He can't deviate from the fucking script. Like his shit was just so redundant. Like everything he said was the same words over and over and over again until he finally interfered in the match and then hung up Owens, then he had, a decent zinger about, you know, upside down land or whatever fuck it was. But everything else was, hey, everybody, look, gently. Or I'm sorry, that's right. He's meat one. So a little bit of let's chat last. I'm the big man, little man, help man. Some people throw soup phones and he throws soup cans. Tempers all over his face. Like, it was the dumbest shit I've ever heard. And it was so redundant and repetitive. I could not tolerate it. But
if you were just if you were a meatwad for the rest of the show, I wouldn't be upset. Just so you know.
all right, I'll sprinkle it in here there maybe. We'll see.
Now, honestly, I don't think that this was a double turn. Although one thing I did find odd, and this is just like it's just more signs of stupidity from the writing team, where like immediately after this segment we go straight to Elias playing the guitar. Like, wait, what? Weren't they friends on Saturday? Didn't they just what? And it doesn't have to be explained. And it, yeah, it is so little, but to make it so blatant, like this segment closes, Elias is in the middle of the ring. What? Where was he, right? I mean, if Elias showed up maybe a little bit later in the show, you'd question it still, but it wouldn't be that apparent. This was just like, look at here. We forgot, you know, that they were friends just less than a week ago.
I mean, yeah, but a part of me also feels like it's just the writing staff playing too much to the heel face dynamic, even though some people believe it doesn't exist anymore. Because if Elias came out to, because if Elias came out to make the save, then it would make him look like a face. Because, you know, heels can't be friends and make a save like that, because heels are supposed to be self-serving. And at no, in no way, shape, or form would Elias interjecting himself have furthered Elias's goal or Elias's brand, which is why one of the things I said after, you know, you asked about the double turn was I want to see how him and Elias interact. Because I felt the same exact way, where as soon as that segment happened right afterwards, I was thinking, okay, maybe Elias is going to bury Owens and say something like he's the reason they lost or some shit like that. And that'll then work towards turning Owens' face like permanently. But no, it wasn't. It was a typical Elias thing, which it's never bad. Me saying typical kind of sounds like I'm just brushing it off, but Elias is always a bright spot to the show, but it didn't do anything to further anything. So, I don't know. Bad writing.
Yeah, I guess we'll have to see if Owens is a face or if this was just a means to get Bobby Lashley over as a heel. I will give them credit for being able to switch during the show. Some people, I even saw it in the comments section, like, oh, did they pull an audible because the people were booing for Lashley? No, this was very much by design, and it's one of those rare cases where their intentions were actually met. Like, they did the job that they were out there to do, which is, I think, a great thing. They manipulated the crowd. That, to me, I'm impressed. But it also bothers me because that makes me feel like I know you can do it. You just suck at it. So that bugs me even more. It's like seeing a good writer that's not writing. Like, okay, so you're fully capable is what you're saying. You just don't do it. All right, well, fuck you too. So after Elias does his – because, by the way, Elias does nothing but sing a little ditty, and that's it. Ronda Rousey, like, cuts him off, shows up, and then their match is next. And again, it's one of those small things, but it just doesn't, it never makes sense to me when stuff like this happens, or when you have like wrestlers walking down the ramp and the other one walking up and they have zero interaction outside of a little nod or a stare. Like, were you pressed for time? Did you not do this correctly? Did you legit just send Elias out there to make fun of the Cubs? Like, that's the only reason he was there. And you know it because he sat there waiting for the boos. So, anyways, Ronda Rousey teams with the Bella Twins again to face the Riot Squad for another rematch from Saturday, just in case you were wondering if whether or not you needed to watch that network special. You don't. This match just, again, more of the same from the Bellas, in my opinion. Sloppy, kind of clunky, weird, missed moves that shouldn't be missed if you're a 10-year wrestler. Like, I never say that I could wrestle better than anyone on the screen, because they've gone through years of training. Their cardio is amazing. They usually have more abs than I do, so I can't put them down, and it would be unfair of me as a fan to put me on any one of their level. But every single time I see the Bellas wrestle, I just get mad. Like, what are you guys doing? But that's not the important part of the match. What happens immediately after is that Nikki and Brie attack Ronda Rousey, and no explanation is given. I'm sure we're going to get one. This turn is something that everybody saw coming. I mean, we thought it was going to happen at the Super Showdown, but of course that doesn't matter because, like you said, glorified house show. We get to see what happens on Raw because I guess that's more important. And the focus is now officially on Nikki and Brie attacking Ronda Rousey. And I don't know. I'm not interested. I don't know if you are, but we're going towards Evolution, which is in like 2 or 3 weeks, I think.
Yeah, I think it's 3 weeks away. 3 or 4. It's something like it's close. I think it's at the end of this month, right?
It's close.
But I don't disagree with you. However, I will say I think the best thing that came from this match was that small wrinkle where you saw Liv on her knees again and Brie was motioning for the yes kicks and then Liv just snapped up and started beating the shit out of her, and then they rolled out to the outside and like all of the girls had to separate them. It wasn't even a, oh, we're heels, we're faces, we're gonna hit you. It was like, oh shit, catfight, like this could be real. Like, I know it wasn't, I'm not stupid, I didn't get worked, but like the fact that they worked off of what happened a couple weeks ago and everybody's okay enough with building that into storyline, that was a neat enough wrinkle to see them actually apply it, because now that really makes me think that in the upcoming weeks we could see something where the Bellas challenge Ronda to a tag match and she needs a tag partner, and then you see the Riot Squad approach her and Liv be like, you know, I want to wrestle with you because I hate Brie, and then that also gives Brie a match at Evolution, which it's straight line, you know what I mean? Like, there's really no reason not to do this, and everybody, even a blind man, can see it coming, kind of thing. But it doesn't turn Liv's face if they have a common enemy. And if anything, it shows a little more depth of character for Liv, because it makes her more than just the bratty girl with the blue tongue and now the pink hair. So it's odd that it's a interesting moment for her to kind of evolve as a character.
Yeah, you know, I didn't mention that, but I thought that moment was awesome. And again, going to the comment section, someone was like, wow, they made the real-life injury into a storyline. How fucking horrible, or something like that. And I'm thinking, why not? I mean, remember when Kidman practically killed someone with a shooting star press, and then that became the only time he was ever interesting outside of Tori Wilson? There's nothing wrong with taking a real injury, as long as it's okay with everybody, and making that the, you know, the starting point for something great. Before this, Liv Morgan really didn't matter.
Yes,
but now,
or even we could even go as far as an addiction when they had Scott Hall's whole, you know, drunk, alcoholic, pill addicted, fucking addict bullshit as a storyline. And it's like, wow, you're just throwing out all the dirty laundry, and that's a story now. Wow, okay.
Yeah. Or Jeff and CM Punk, you know, like, I enjoyed that small moment where it was like, oh shit, this is another level. And that's the type of realism that the quote-unquote reality era really needs. Not Michael Cole saying, oh, this is real, this is different than anything we've seen before. No, you speak with the actions, and that's what we saw tonight. So Liv, like, she looked legit, like, pissed. And it made me wonder, like, why didn't they just do that on Saturday? They teased it. They kind of threw it out there a little bit, but they saved that particular moment for tonight. And it was just like, well, where was that Saturday? Liv was like, you know what? No, now I'm mad. Okay. All right. But anyways, I guess this is telling of how we feel about Ronda Rousey versus the Bellas. We're more interested in the realism that Liv Morgan portrayed than we are with twins that we don't care about attacking Ronda Rousey. And where was Natty? Was she busy feeding her cats?
That could have been what it was. But I don't see. This is going to be one of those weird situations, and I think Ronda Rousey deserves a pass in this whole storyline, obviously, because we know she's better than that. But she's probably going to be one of the few wrestlers in the history of wrestling that can go down as having one of the best debut matches ever, you know, at Mania with her, Angle, Stephanie, and Triple H, to now being in probably the most unforgettable storyline for the next 2 months, or I guess this month and last month. So I'll just say for 2 months, or hey, even better, I'll use a Michael Coleism and say for a number of weeks, the most unforgettable. Yeah, for the most unforgettable storyline for a number of weeks, and she's probably going to have the worst match at Evolution, because it's going to be a train wreck. Like, even if Nikki's gotten better, even if blah 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 blah, it's not hate on the Bellas because they're pretty or they slept their way to the top. Regardless of if any of us have, you know, used it as just fodder when we're pissed off, or just even think it, or even if we see it. It's just the fact that they've been around for 11 years and they're awful. Like, anybody. Like, you could take most indie girls are just as good as them, if not better, with much less experience under their belt and not even on the biggest stage. So none of this makes sense on why they continue to get, you know, lauded as legends or so good or all these chances, aside from the fact that they happen to have been connected at the right points in time, and they made a decent brand out of themselves. That's really all it is. It's branding. The Bellas are a fairly large brand outside of the wrestling market, so people know it, so it's name recognition, and that's the only reason they're in the position they're in. It's not because of talent. It's not because who cares how much they want to be good wrestlers or how hard they work, because they still suck. You know, you could try really, really hard at your job and still be bad at it. People get fired all the time because of that. Just because you're trying hard doesn't mean we get to just pat you on the back and go, well, you're trying, so I'll just overlook it now. You can keep fucking up, though. It's fine, because I can tell you're trying. No!
Yeah, Harry.
Hey, leave him alone. He's sick.
Speaking of trying hard, your beloved five-headed Alicia Fox teams with Jinder again to take on Bayley and Finn Balor. At this point, I mean, why do we not have a wacky, wavy, inflatable arm-flailing tube man in the shape and colors of Finn Balor doing his arm thing? I just feel like they're missing a great chance here. I don't want to see Alicia Fox and Jinder Mahal wrestle anymore, ever, in life. I'm just not interested. So that's all I have to say about this particular segment overall.
Obviously, I don't have the same issues you do with them in general, because Alicia's just playing up the crazy character who is erratic and seemingly, like, just off a rocker and a little crazy when it comes to, like, not knowing how to do a swinging neck breaker and all other stuff. But her character
is fine. Are you
making
excuses for her bad wrestling because she's crazy?
No. I'm saying it all falls in line with her character. And the only egregious thing is the swinging neckbreaker. And we've seen lots of people botch that over the years, especially if it's the running variation, which is why nobody really does that anymore, if you've noticed. Like, I think Alicia might be the only female wrestler that does that.
So that's just like a drunk daddy long legs.
Which is kind of, it still works for her character, though. You know what I mean? Like, I can't argue how she wrestles, because that's her character. It's like, It's like Chelsea Green, Laurel Van Ness on the Indies. She's the hot mess. She wrestles like a hot mess. She'll, you know, show off to the crowd, or she'll do something crazy, which might look a little sloppy or not, but it's all par for the course. Yes, the correct gimmick can cover up for stupid mistakes or not knowing how to pull something off completely correctly. Yes, it can, and it sounds like an excuse, but it still works for the character. But in regard to what you said about not wanting to see them wrestle, I think they're fine. Jinder is just in a shitty spot, and I don't think they had anything for him. And they give him some weird, like, namaste love guru bullshit. And then they match him up with the foil female wrestler just to kind of be like an odd couple kind of thing. Which, it's endearing if anybody liked the characters, but nobody does. So, that's why this just comes off cringy and nobody wants it. Plus, it's going against Bayley and Balor. Nobody really wants them either. Balor's been... buried is not the correct word, but I don't have a better one in my vocabulary at the moment. But he's been buried to the point of, like, worthlessness. Like, he's lost every challenge against Rollins for the Intercontinental title. He lost his rematch for the Universal title. I can't actually remember the last time he won when it wasn't against Baron Corbin, and he didn't have to put, like, the fucking demon makeup on. Like, it really took demon makeup against Baron Corbin to solidify a win there. And that, I think, is the last, like, any kind of big win he's had. So that should tell you something. And Bayley, we know how we all feel about Bayley and the way she's been booked. So no one cares about these four people in general. So it's hard to watch them face each other for 3 weeks in a row.
Chelsea Green smells really good in person.
She looks like she would. I'm that's not even trying to be creepy or whatever. Like, she definitely looks like she smells good.
Yeah. Anyways,
hey, that's Zack Ryder's girl. Pause off.
Woo, woo, woo. Oh, okay, so another instance on Raw where I was upset the minute it started, and then they were able to change my mind mid-segment. So Baron Corbin has a bunch of jobbers in the middle of the ring, and they're supposed to be representing the entire world, and he's going to put himself in a match so that he can win and be a part of the World Cup, WWE's version of it, where two Americans are already considered for the match. There will be 8 people in a mini tournament, I guess, come Crown Jewel, and it will be for a World Cup. Sounds cool. I love tournaments, so I'm kind of okay with it. Baron Corbin being in this match would have bothered me because I don't want to see him in any match. The Battle Royal was annoying, and it was just a bunch of jobbers, and it was a way for us to hate Baron Corbin even more. But, I mean, I don't think there's another level of hatred I can meet. So I just found it a waste of time. And then, and I'm not saying I called it or I knew, I'm not pulling a Justin Watry, but the Conquistador, when he turned around and you saw the fat of his neck, I thought to myself, is that Kurt Angle? And then the way he stood, you know, as if he's like sitting on an invisible stool, but just barely, I'm like, oh shit, that's Kurt Angle. So when he won the match, or when he hit the Angle Slam, it confirmed it. And the moment went from, this was stupid, to, oh, that's a creative way to bring Angle back, even if it's just for, you know, a Crown Jewel moment. So I don't know. I was kind of, I'm okay with saying that I'm wrong, you know, because I'm hardly ever wrong. So when it does happen, it's a shock to even me. So today I want to give credit to them for fooling me, because immediately I'm like, this is stupid. I don't want to see this. And then the next thing you know, Kurt Angle's in the fucking World Cup. And if you look at the players in this match, I have a feeling they're going for big names. Already it's John Cena and Angle. And, I mean, there's a little bit of a heightened sense of excitement when my brother saw Big Show tweet Crown Jewel, something like, you know, I'm in or whatever. So he may be a name thrown in there. But, yeah, I don't know. What did you feel about this segment? Were you as happy as I was with the result while being upset to begin with, or did you just see it happen and not care?
I'll say the part that bothered me initially was Corbin's just dismissing of Heath Slater. And it's not the fact that I like Heath Slater, don't get me wrong. That wasn't what I'm getting at all. It's just the fact that he dismissed Slater by saying, "You suck," and walked off. Like, this is the first time we've seen Slater in a month or two, maybe. I can't even remember the last time we saw him on Raw. And he just goes, "But dude, you suck," and walks off. It's like, really? So you basically telling the talent that they're terrible is something that you feel like you should do as the GM? Okay, that's interesting. Not. And I guess now it's going to turn into maybe some kind of weird prove-it thing again with Slater. Like, that was supposed to be his whole gimmick with Rhino before, where Rhino was trying to toughen him up. And then now I don't even know if Rhino still has a job because I haven't seen him in forever. So now it's Corbin saying Slater sucks, so Slater's going to have to prove that. So what is it going to be, like Hawkins versus Slater next week and Hawkins beats Slater to prove that Slater still sucks? Like, I don't know. Like, it just, it felt like a stupid, stupid moment just to try to take a shit on a character that, you know, many people like, because he was wearing the I Got Kids thing. He's like the lovable loser. He's like the Bad News Bears kind of character where we know he kind of sucks, but you don't tell him he sucks. Like, we like him. He's a nice guy. Like, don't be a dick. So that's the part that bothered me. And the rest of what you said about the Battle Royal was completely spot on. Like, I did like a little bit on the references to older wrestlers or moves, like the Iron Claw, which I think they called the Bronze Claw from the one guy, and the overly stereotypical, you know, nationalities and stuff like that. So it was interesting, sort of, just from a trying to connect the dots perspective. But yeah, Angle was the only thing that really saved it.
Oh, Angle. Yeah, Corbin's an idiot. I just, whenever little moments like that happen where they put down a wrestler, like, in such a small amount of time and it just kills them, I just ask the question, like, why? What did that serve? It almost always serves nothing. Speaking of serving nothing, Nia Jax is wrestling after this. Her and Ember Moon have a 3-minute match of...
Now, that's a lie. Exactly. I'm pretty sure when somebody's serving her, they serve her quite a bit. See? Fat joke.
Nice. End
wordplay.
That's one.
Woo.
Yeah. yeah, this is...
I never said it was a good joke. Jesus Christ.
Yeah, that's fine. I'll take it. This was a 3-minute match, and it wasn't bad, you know, but it was every complaint that we could have about either one of these two females in a 3-minute match. Ember Moon wrestled on one speed. Nia Jax is big and clunky and lumbering, and she's not like most girls. And that was that. So what do you think the implications are of Ember Moon winning? And hold on. She wins in a countout, and Nia Jax seems like they had a match full of energy where she just Ember Moon got the best of her in the ring with the 1-2-3. Did you find that odd? Because I found that odd. Bitch won with a count out, and you're going to go in there and hold her arm up? I don't know. A little forced.
Yeah, but a part of me also felt like it was forced because of how many turns there were today. And I kind of feel like that was the overarching theme, was, are these teams staying together? Where do allegiances lie, kind of thing? And her rolling in and, you know, grabbing Ember and putting her arm up and then, like, patting her on the head or putting her in, like, a little noogie kind of headlock and then walking off, like, okay, that showed they're still friends even though Ember won via countout. Sure. Could there be more to that? Who knows? But I feel like it was just a weird theme of the episode today. It was, like, friendship and betrayal. It sounds like a bad Days of Our Life kind of episode.
Who knows? More importantly, who cares? Moving on.
You're not wrong.
Oh, Trish Stratus. She's still pretty hot. So she comes out.
No,
to,
we know who was the hottest one in that segment. Don't even try.
Well, obviously it was me.
You weren't in this segment, sir. You stop that.
I'm in every segment.
Oh, okay. That's good to know.
She tries to defend herself against the moment of bliss that we saw last week. And Alexa and Mickey come out, and they berate Trish and blah, blah, blah. This could all be condensed into one thing. The two singles matches that were rumored, or actually not even rumored, they were said to be happening, turns into a tag match. We're now going to have Lita and Trish versus Alexa and Mickey. You know, I said this in the chat or the comment section of my Raw report. When I was younger, I had a really big crush on Lita, like a huge one. Like my wall was covered with her. Actually, my walls were covered with all female wrestlers. It was an amazing room.
Uh-huh. So are you sure the posters weren't just covering up, like, your Jackson Pollock attempt?
No, I mean, I feel like that was part of the theme.
Oh, okay. It brought the room together.
Yeah,
okay.
It really helped everything come together. So
thank you.
See, yeah, you're welcome. Easy money shot. So, you know how, like, last week Harry was all gung-ho about the nostalgia factor that he felt when Triple H and Undertaker and all of them were. When Lita's music hit, even though I knew it was coming, I got super pumped. And I don't know if it was the little kid in me saying, like, there's that thong-wearing girl that knows how to flip, or if that's the little pool that, you know, we're all depending on. Because I didn't feel it with Triple H and HBK and The Undertaker and Kane. Because in my mind, I feel like their absence is not very, ironically enough, present. And by the way, Heyman, that's the proper usage of irony, not what you said.
Mm-hmm.
But with Lita, like, of course we've seen her recently. We've seen her in a match or two. We've seen her show up, pre-shows and everything. But I don't know. I mean, the last thing we saw was the Royal Rumble, I think. But even at that moment, I got hyped. I was like, oh, shit, it's her. Here we go. So this turning into a tag match, the reason why I bring it up, the reason why I bring the nostalgia factor up is because I've been so upset at there not being an actual storyline moving forward. You know, like, this is so randomly thrown together. Like, why is Lita facing Mickey James? So I'm not applauding them tonight for their attempt to actually give it a reason. But at the very least, I feel like now we have a reason, no matter how small it might be. Are you happy with the making this a tag match? Or did you not care at all either way?
Well, I'm more in the not care at all either way bucket. But I will say that was also partially because of the fact that when we saw Lita at Royal Rumble, she was wearing, like, a back brace, and she could barely flip, and she looked fucking bad. No offense to her, no offense to the little kid in you, but she did not look like she should have been in there, much less taking ghost kicks from Sasha Banks in the corner. But the tag thing, that protects everybody. Because it's not like Mickey or Alexa need the protecting, because I've been on multiple, I guess, podcasts, whatever you want to say, saying that Alexa's gotten better. She's actually not bad in the ring, all of that stuff, regardless of what the IWC likes to think about if she's bad or not. She's actually not. It's just the fact that I don't think Lita could wrestle an entire match, even if it's only like 6 or 7 minutes, without possibly hurting herself or something possibly going awry, even with Mickey. So this tag match protects everybody involved, gives a little more storyline, like you said, plus it gives everybody the nostalgia nod they wanted when Evolution was even initially announced with Mickey and Trish. So now there has to be a showdown at some point between Mickey and Trish in that match, and then that could lead to one more match with Trish or something, you know, something like that, just to kind of get it out of everybody's system for Mickey versus Trish one more time. Maybe winner gets a shot at the women's championship. Who knows? But regardless, it ties everything up nicely, and much like your posters and the black light, it ties the room together.
Yeah, I'm really happy about the tag match and moving it. I mean, Lita, a lot of people say she was a really good wrestler. She really wasn't. I don't remember ever watching a Lita match and thinking, damn, this girl's amazing. She was just cool and quote-unquote extreme. So having her go up against Mickey, who's, you know, pretty serviceable but also really bad when she's facing a really bad wrestler. I don't know what it is about Mickey, but, like, I've seen her miscommunicate with multiple Gail Kim. one of the Bella twins. I'm not sure which one. And I just the idea of Mickey versus Lita makes me very uncomfortable. So I'm glad that they're making it a tag match. And who knows, we may get the finger lick of doom during the match.
Oh, I see, and I would enjoy that one. Plus, just to finish what I was saying in the beginning of this whole segment, Mickey, oh my God, she looked so fucking good. Yes, be it as sexist of a comment, I don't care, but oh my God, Mickey was looking fucking good in that segment tonight.
Yeah, you know, I'm not a fan of Mickey's face, but seriously, the outfit, like, I mean, you know what
yes.
I like about Mickey is, like, you could see that. Like, if you and I were to go out to a bar, like, that we would see that, and we would both be like, and then we'd, you know.
Yeah, it's like, hello, pretty lady, hi.
Hi, this is my friend Tony.
Wait, have you met Tony?
I'm Andrew. No, you're not. Yeah, okay, whatever. Yeah, she looked really good. Mickey.
Yeah.
I didn't have Mickey on the wall. You know, the wall. Okay, so look. Lita had her own entire wall. Stacey Keibler had her own entire wall.
Oh,
that's
yes.
how large of a range my attractive, like, what my type, if you would, were. And then the third wall was everybody else, except for, like, Ivory or Jacqueline. They didn't go up there at all. And then that was it. And what's funny is I lived upstairs. Well, my room was upstairs. And I had neighbors on a wall on the other side who lived, like, their house was only one story. So frequently they would look up into my room and they would see these fucking walls blasted with women in scantily clad bikinis and you know, lingerie. Because back then, you know, all the divas were half naked in WWE magazine. And they would be like, yeah, they were like, hey, who's that girl? I'm like, Lita. I don't know that person. Watch wrestling, you idiot. Yeah, they were fun. They were a
but
fun group.
Want to... Well, that's good. Yeah, I mean, I never thought that you had, like, a look, necessarily. But we know from at least the ones you like to gush about, like Sasha and AJ, you tend to like petite ones. But
mm-hmm.
they don't necessarily have the same kind of look. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, that I do definitely like the petite ones. It's great. They're travel size. You can take them anywhere.
I'm not disagreeing. You know, I'm a bit taller than you, I think. So the shorter ones, like, I just like to think I'm being considerate if they're short. That's all. But, hey, that's starting to get to that whole level where I doubt women will listen to this podcast, even if they're one of the two or three that do. So let's steer away from locker room talk and finish the show.
It's 2018. Women have an entire march dedicated to calling themselves sluts. Believe me, they're okay with the talk. As long as
it
we're not
depends
saying
on which ones we're talking
pussy.
To. It depends on which ones we're talking to. Like, not necessarily. Face fuck me, Felicia might not be listening to us. So it might be the other side of Twitter that is like super up in arms about anything even slightly funny or sexist. So yeah, let's just divert.
I encourage those women to listen to us. You know, I was thinking a friend of mine who is okay. So according to my friend who knows that I write for 411 Mania, I am internet famous, which I disagree completely because I don't have a blue check next to my name on Twitter. So it's not really. But he asked me a question.
I wish that's your validation, but okay.
Yeah, he said, "What happens if in the future, for whatever reason, someone goes back to something you wrote online and like screenshots it and just blasts you and saying like you're a misogynistic pig?" And I'm like, I've never thought about that. Not even once. I have no idea. And I tried to go back in my head and I'm like, have I ever made a comment that would be considered misogynistic? It took 0.2 seconds for me to realize that. Oh yeah, I have. No, I don't think I would care. I mean, what is my career trajectory right now? I'm going to be a writer, and I'm going to bartend, and I'm going to own a bar. I mean, there's really nothing you could damage there. My bar's probably going to be like a house of whores anyways. So.
And you're going to be the biggest one there.
Amen to that.
Hey,
oh,
hey.
Man.
Dudes can be whores too. Come on.
You're right. So Chad Gable and Bobby Roode have faced the Ascension tonight.
I like that's the segue for Bobby Roode and Chad Gable is Horde Talk.
Yeah, and nobody cared. We say that a lot, but really the crowd, I was wondering when the CM Punk chat was going to happen. This seemed like the right spot for that, for sure. And the tag team that they tried to make look really bad, like badasses over the past couple of weeks, they eliminated any possible traction that they gained immediately with this match and with the aftermath of this match. I'm not saying I don't like the fact that AOP came down and trucked over everybody. I actually loved it. But it's just funny to me to see Connor O'Brien get a little mini push and then it just not matter. Like, it's like they do these things and then they think, well, shit, we got AOP right here. We got to push them. Never mind what we were doing for the past 3 weeks. It's just, it's always been, because they do that a lot with a lot of different people.
I mean, I think we talked about this last week when they came out and they bulldozed the B team. But
yeah,
they I feel like the writers have to validate the opponents that the monsters, quote unquote, are running over. So the fact that Connor was picking up the slack for Victor, and I think that's the reason why the Ascension looks bad, is Victor's just not very good. Like, he has his moments,
yeah,
don't get me wrong, but Connor is definitely the talent out of those two. So they got a couple wins. They traded back and forth. You know, Gable won with the Chaos Theory German suplex, which I don't care what he calls it. I still call it what Doug Williams calls it because that was fucking awesome, and he's the first one I saw doing. But not the point. The point I'm getting at is the fact that it's just the writers feel like they have to build up both sides just to make the squash kind of look bigger or better or more impressive. And that's just stupid because a win here or there is not going to change the general perception of a team or a wrestler. It's, you know, one or two wins doesn't necessarily make you go from, wow, Chad Gable's a nobody, to, oh my God, he's a contender. No, it just goes, oh, they gave him two wins. Or, okay, he's on a little bit of a streak. Let's see where this goes. Like, you need to build them up for a few months over more than just the same fucking people for you to go, all right, now this is a valid team. And then have them get run over. But no, why would we do that? I don't know.
Yeah, we have like 12 events we got to build towards. And yeah, proof of that was tonight. I mean, the crowd just didn't care. And this was a hot crowd for the most part. They just weren't interested. I mean, they weren't afraid to tell you they weren't interested either.
Well, it's Chicago, yeah.
Yeah. So we're done with that. Heyman comes out to cut a little promo before the main event. And, I mean, I feel like we would just be doing the same thing that Heyman's doing by talking about this promo. Because it was everything that Heyman is good at, but it was also very repetitive. Nothing was new. They're just sitting there letting you know that, you know, Brock Lesnar still exists. So, I don't know. It was there. We can go straight to the main event unless you want something or you have something you want to say about it.
Nope. You know from Jump Street that I was always a little more negative than Heyman because I'm fairly sure like the first or second show, like you and Harry yelled at me about like, no, we do not say negative things about Paul Heyman. And then I'm like, but he said nothing and he's done the same promo for like 5 years. So like it gets old after a while. So that's usually my contention. So it's nice to see we're on the same page.
Yeah, I mean, you know, with regards to Heyman, it's like his worst promo is better than 85% of the roster. But just because you're a good promo doesn't mean that you always cut a good promo. Case in point would be Triple H. You know, he's better than a lot of people on the current roster, but that's because he has the freedom to say whatever he wants. But then you look at his whole respect promo and you're like, what is this, open mic night? Like, this is what I would see at any given poetry reading. Respect.
Yeah.
Blah, 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 blah. Respect. Okay, shut up. So the main event happened. It was a rematch of Saturday's, and admittedly, I did not see the Australia six-man tag, so I have nothing to compare it to with regards to what happened. From what I read, they really focused on the idea of Dean Ambrose turning, and that was basically the you know, the story, as Michael Cole would call it, in the match. Whereas tonight, you saw a little bit of a divide go up between Drew, Dolph, and Braun, to the point where Braun legit was, like, screaming at Dolph's face. So there was drama there. And then they lose the match, which, and I'll definitely point this out, I believe a week or two ago I said that this idea of Dean Ambrose leaving the Shield was going to go away after the Australia show. I figured it was a short-term method to get interest into a match that was coming up, and it looks like they're extending that, so obviously I was wrong. Doesn't really make me more interested. My mind hasn't changed on that, nor has my mind changed on the idea that nobody really needs to turn in the Shield, and that this is just more drama for they're just drawing it out longer for whatever reason, a reason I'm not sure of. But to give them I really enjoyed this match. I thought that the whole thing was good, but they really do six-man tags really well, the WWE. They really do. And even when they do the finisher fest or whatever, there's enough of a difference in each match to get excited. I thought that this was a really good main event, and I had a good time. So I'm very proud of them for giving me that feeling. Not easy.
No, that's fine. And it's interesting how, as you'll get from my grade, a not exactly wonderful Raw proved you wrong twice in the same night.
Yeah.
Sheesh.
Yeah.
That's got to be a record, right?
Yeah. Something like it.
Okay, just checking. I haven't been doing this that long to know if that's a record. That's what I was just asking. But yeah, so the Super Showdown main event, not main event, but next, whatever the fuck it was, that six-man tag, that did focus more on Ambrose and if he was going to turn or not, because they even had a cute moment where there was the miscommunication, and I think Roman accidentally Superman punched Ambrose. But as you saw Ambrose kind of on the floor against the barricade, kind of just mulling his options over, Braun was going to just gore him, and Roman comes out of, like, from out of screen and just spears him through the barricade, which, yes, it's not something we've never seen, and they did it quite often during their feud last year, but it was still a nice visual, and the fact that it was actually timed fairly well was cool, and, you know, they all stood tall at the end, yada, yada, yada. So that was an interesting story, and I think I liked the story from Super Showdown more than tonight. But tonight wasn't bad. It was a good TV main event. The dissension in both groups was interesting, sort of. It added an odd wrinkle that is unnecessary everywhere, but I guess it sort of helps to continue any kind of... I guess it keeps a lot of tension in general within all six of them. So if a shoe does drop somewhere, then there is always a reason for... like Drew to go after Braun if that happens, or, you know, Dean to turn on the Shield and then that happens, or vice, or, you know, they can interchange more if there's palpable tension between all six of them. So sure, I guess this might just set up what the main event scene is going to look like for the next 3 to 6 months, perhaps, but I don't know. It was fine. It didn't like wow me. And I did, however, like the way it ended with, you know, not only with Drew winning, because I love the fact that Drew is always the one standing tall whenever there's an issue with the group. Like, in all of their singles matches, Drew still wins the singles match, when, regardless of the outcome for the other one. Or Drew will basically win the match for Ziggler and then carry him off on his shoulders or something like that. And the same thing happened here, where Drew hits the Claymore, 1, 2, 3, immediately rolls out. You saw him like hit Braun on the shoulder, pick his ass up, pick Ziggler up, and basically be like, you know, fuck you both, we're going, let's go. And, you know, they kind of fell in line, which is interesting because you'd always think that Braun was kind of the leader, but Drew really steps up in these matches. So I don't know if that's going to be that wrinkle where Braun and Drew fight for supremacy at some point. But it would be a good match. I really enjoyed Drew McIntyre. And every time he talked, even in their backstage segment, it was so much better than anything the other two said. So, like, when Drew McIntyre talks, I listen. And when Dean Ambrose was sulking on a completely different rope than the other two and just rolled out and walked up the ring, I was just sitting here going, why didn't he do that 2 weeks ago? You know, why did he just play like Monkey in the Middle and then roll back in with the Shield 2 weeks ago instead of do this? This made more sense for the 2 week ago show than now. That's what I like and what pisses me off all at the same time.
Yeah. Because they're probably unsure where they want to go to. But yeah, you can't recreate what Drew is. That is, he has the undeniable it factor that the WWE claims to always look for and say that you can't make that happen. Everything the man does is gold. And it's so crazy because, I mean, he was the chosen one at one point, and he's proving it, even though it was a little, he needed a little bit of growing pain. I don't know. I think he's
great.
I
was going to say, he was kind of awful when he was the chosen one, though. There's a reason why he left.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure. And he just looked weird. He was a weird-looking man.
Yeah, he definitely didn't fill out or anything. So the way he looks now and the beard and everything, he just looks like a man. And then, like, the whole Scottish psychopath thing, like, whatever the fuck you want to say. Like, you know, I know DeMarco did it a couple months ago where he was just basically saying, what's a man, who's a dude, kind of on his show. But McIntyre is a man, and there's no two bones about it. Like, that's just, yeah, impressive.
Mm-hmm. So that's Raw. Let's do that thing at the end of the show where we give arbitrary ratings to a show as if we're better than everybody else.
7 seconds of dancing?
Yeah,
is that a different show?
Random dancing. Yes. What was your favorite match or moment of Raw?
When it was over. I think I gushed about it enough. Drew McIntyre and everything he does.
True. Your least favorite match or moment?
That's tough because there's a lot to pick from. Not to pick from. I guess least favorite, which... Now, are we going least favorite or are we going Greg Watry?
Greg Watry mode, for sure.
Okay, so that's the most cringe-tastic thing. I guess the most just worthless and cringy portion would be the aforementioned Heath Slater backstage segment. Like, that just pissed me off.
Yeah, I could see that. Okay, MVP?
Drew McIntyre, were you not listening?
Whoa. Your rating?
3.5.
Wow. Pretty shitty rating.
I know. So now, I guess, since you just ran the gauntlet on me, I guess I'll do it back to you so you can give me your 2 cents. What was your favorite match or moment?
I'll go with the main event. I enjoyed it. I had a good time watching it.
Okay. What was your Greg Watry?
You're right. There was a lot to choose from just in terms of, like, I don't know. I was bored. If you can see, I was a host tonight, so I kind of had to be somewhat impartial, but I didn't really have any rant worthy moments of Raw. What that usually means is, like, I mean, it just means I didn't care. So if I don't care, then there's nothing for me to, rant about. Then you just didn't really do all that great of a job tonight, WWE.
Mm-hmm.
But if I had to choose a specific moment, I would probably say, the Triple H's promo, I disliked it that much. I was very, very bothered by it. It's like when someone tries to talk to me in a way that they think they're coming off smart, but they're not, and it pisses me off. It happens every now and then, in real life, where you're like, oh, that's Tony, I'm going to talk to him. And you could just hear it. They use words incorrectly, or they, that doesn't really mean that, or they say this is ironic and it's not, it's just coincidental. And it's not that I'm so fucking intelligent that, you know, everybody's stupid. It's just that I try my best not to pretend that I'm smarter than I really am, because there's millions of people out there that know more than I do, that know more words than I do, that are better writers, better speakers, better people even than I am. And I will never, ever try to match them. If anything, I'll try to learn from them. So I would never be that person. I would never try to be that person. And Triple H's promo tonight was him being that person. So, fuck you.
Damn. Well, I know he's not going to be your MVP. So who would be your MVP tonight?
Shit. I don't know. Today's show kind of sucked. You know what? I'm going to give it to Lita for old time's sake. To Lita for that picture I have of me in a double XL shady shirt giving her a hug as she signed the book that she didn't write, which, by the way, had multiple misspellings. I don't know where WWE got their original publishing group, but every book that they put out prior to Mick Foley's first one was really bad.
I'm glad I'd never read any of those, because I was not that big of a WWE guy, as we've been over. So I'd never really felt the urge to buy the books. So now I kind of want to, just to see how bad they were, though.
Yeah, like Lita's book, I remember it vividly because I was upset. I think within the first five pages, I found like three spelling errors and like just a bunch of like awkwardly grammatical moments where it was just like, well, that could have been worded differently. Well, shit, maybe Lita did write it. I don't know. But this was around the time when RVD owned a comic book store at a mall that was 5 minutes away from, well, still is 5 minutes away from where I live, Five Star Comics. And every month he would have a new wrestler there, and the lines were pretty long, and wrestling was still pretty popular. And Lita had just written her book with the help of another, like a ghostwriter, but not really a ghostwriter because his name's on the book too. And I was super hyped. I went to go get it signed. That was pretty cool having a spot that was like 5 minutes away from my house where a bunch of wrestlers would go, like randomly sometimes. Didn't last that long though.
No, I think there's one, I think about 20 minutes away from me in Oxford Valley Mall, because I know they had, I think, Jericho and Shawn Michaels and Flair a few years ago. But, you know, it's one of the bigger malls, so that's probably why. But regardless, it doesn't happen super often. But, yeah, that's nice to know that your nostalgia boner gave you the MVP. So works. I can appreciate that. And what's your overall rating, sir?
I'm going to give them a 4. The main event I thought was really fun. And the fact that they, you know, proved me wrong. Also, to me, I'm not upset about it. However, it didn't really, I mean, usually me saying they proved me wrong means that something exciting happened, but no, not really. You proved me wrong, but nothing happened. So
they proved you wrong by purely taking the other path where you said no and they said yes. And you're just like, oh, okay.
Okay. All right. Well, moving on. Yeah.
I guess three lefts do make it right. Okay, whatever. Fuck it.
Is that what we're doing? Okay, sure.
So, okay, I think we hit the final reaction point, right?
Yeah, that's it. We're done. We did the show without Harry.
Wow. And without needing, you know, a replacement, too, because it's still always nice when, you know, we can fly one down, just the two of us, you know, like that Will Smith song.
Yeah. You could be Jaden. Yeah, it's a good show. I have to run downstairs to end the show on the MacBook. So let's just say toodaloo. For Andrew Ballas and this guy named Tony Acero, I would like to say two words to everyone. Deuces, bitches.